Have you ever wondered why some people seem to get everything they want in life? They land the best jobs, secure promotions, and somehow convince others to help them without breaking a sweat. What's their secret? According to Dr. Cindy McGovern, they've mastered the art of selling, whether they realize it or not. Every job is a sales job has become a sleeper hit in the business world, with executives at companies like Google and Apple reportedly keeping copies on their desks. The book has gained particular traction among millennials seeking career advancement without feeling inauthentic. McGovern's approach resonates because it reframes selling as something we all do naturally, not as a sleazy tactic, but as a fundamental human skill. As Oprah once noted in an interview, understanding how to sell your ideas might be the most underrated skill in business today. Let's discover why everyone, yes, even you, is in sales, whether you've accepted it yet or not. Think about the last time you convinced your partner to try a new restaurant, persuaded your boss to approve your idea, or talked your way out of a parking ticket. Congratulations, you made a sale. The revelation that we're all salespeople often triggers immediate resistance. I'm not pushy, you might think, or I don't want to manipulate people. This aversion stems from our negative associations with stereotypical salespeople, the aggressive car dealer, or the telemarketer interrupting dinner. But here's the truth. You've been selling your whole life without even realizing it. Remember convincing your parents to extend your curfew as a teenager? That was a sale. Successfully interviewing for a job? Another sale. Getting your roommate to finally wash the dishes? You guessed it, a sale. The problem isn't selling itself, but how we conceptualize it. When we label something as selling, we often become self-conscious and abandon our natural persuasive abilities. It's like the difference between casually speaking a foreign language you've grown up with versus formally studying its grammar rules. Suddenly, you become awkward and hesitant. Consider children. They're natural salespeople. They instinctively know how to ask for what they want, persist through rejection, and celebrate victories. They haven't yet learned to fear the word no or worry about appearing pushy. Somewhere along the way to adulthood, many of us lost this confidence. The first step toward embracing your inner salesperson is recognizing that selling isn't about manipulation. It's about solving problems and creating mutual benefit. When you help someone get what they need while also achieving your goals, that's ethical selling at its finest. The air conditioning technician who fixes your system while also suggesting a maintenance plan that prevents future breakdowns isn't being pushy, he's being helpful. The difference lies in intention and execution. Once you acknowledge that selling is simply persuasive communication with a purpose, you can start harnessing this skill intentionally rather than accidentally, and that's when doors begin to open. Sales opportunities surround us constantly, yet most go unnoticed. That casual conversation with your neighbor could lead to a job referral. The extra attention you give a client might result in a glowing testimonial. The thoughtful email to a colleague could spark a valuable collaboration. These moments, these openings for unofficial sales, are everywhere. Consider the story of Maria, an accountant who never considered herself a salesperson. During a routine audit, she noticed her client struggling with inventory management. Instead of focusing solely on the numbers, she mentioned a simple spreadsheet solution she had developed for another client. The client was so impressed by her proactive approach that he not only implemented her suggestion, but also referred 3 new businesses to her firm. Maria wasn't trying to sell anything, she was simply being helpful, yet she made one of the biggest sales of her career. These unofficial sales opportunities often appear in unexpected places. The elevator ride with the CEO, the industry conference coffee break, the company holiday party, even the gym where you might meet someone looking for exactly what your business offers. The key is recognizing these moments when they arise. But here's the challenge. Most of us are trained to see sales opportunities only in formal settings, the scheduled client meeting, the pitch presentation, the networking event. We miss the informal chances to demonstrate value, build relationships, and position ourselves or our ideas favorably. Start paying attention to the questions people ask you. When someone says, "Do you know how to fix this spreadsheet?" or "Have you ever dealt with this situation before?" They're not just making conversation, they're signaling a need. These are buying signals in disguise. Instead of giving a quick answer and moving on, recognize these moments as opportunities to demonstrate your expertise and establish yourself as a resource. Remember that woman who asked about your fitness routine in the break room? She might be looking for a personal trainer or know someone who is. The colleague wondering about your experience with a software program? They might be evaluating it for their department. The neighbor asking about your landscaper? They're in the market for one. Once you start seeing these everyday interactions as potential sales opportunities, you'll be amazed at how many doors begin to open without ever having to make a cold call or deliver a formal pitch. In our increasingly skeptical world, trust has become the most valuable currency in any transaction. People buy from those they trust, collaborate with those they trust, and promote those they trust. Without trust, even the most compelling pitch will fall flat. With trust, even an imperfect proposal has a chance. Building trust isn't about grand gestures. It's about consistent, authentic behavior that demonstrates reliability and genuine concern for others. Consider the story of a tech support representative who stayed 2 hours past his shift to help retrieve data from a customer's crashed computer before an important presentation. He wasn't a salesperson, but his actions sold more effectively than any marketing campaign could have. The customer became a loyal advocate, referring countless friends to the company. Trust develops through what I call the trust trifecta: competence, consistency, and caring. People need to believe you know what you're doing, competence, that you'll do what you say, consistency, and that you have their best interests at heart, caring. Miss any one of these elements and trust erodes quickly. Competence doesn't mean knowing everything. It means being honest about what you know and don't know. When a furniture store designer admitted she wasn't sure about a fabric's durability, but promised to research it thoroughly before making a recommendation, her honesty built more trust than if she had pretended to know everything. Consistency means following through on promises, no matter how small. The contractor who calls when he says he will, even if it's just to say he's running late, builds more trust than one who delivers exceptional work but communicates poorly. We trust people whose words and actions align. Caring is perhaps the most powerful element of trust. When people sense you genuinely want what's best for them, even if it means sending them elsewhere or recommending a competitor's product, they develop a level of trust that transcends the transaction. The financial advisor who told a client, "You don't need my services yet, come back when you've saved another $10,000, lost a small commission, but gained a lifelong client who later brought millions to manage. In practice, building trust means listening more than speaking, asking questions that demonstrate genuine interest, and putting the other person's needs before your immediate gain. It means admitting mistakes quickly and making them right. It means remembering personal details and following up, not just when you need something, but when you can offer something. The most successful unofficial salespeople aren't those with the smoothest pitches. They're those who have built the strongest foundations of trust. And unlike formal sales techniques, trust building is something anyone can master with practice and sincerity. The most crucial moment in any sales process, official or unofficial, is the ask. Yet this is precisely where most people falter. We plan carefully, build relationships, establish trust, and then hesitate. We hint at what we want, talk around it, or hope the other person will somehow intuit our desires. This reluctance to ask directly for what we want is perhaps the biggest obstacle to our success. Why is asking so difficult? Fear of rejection tops the list. Being told no feels personal, even when it isn't. We also worry about appearing pushy or selfish. Many of us were raised to believe that asking directly for what we want is somehow impolite or inappropriate. Some fear that asking will damage the relationship they've worked so hard to build. Consider Sarah, a talented graphic designer who consistently delivered exceptional work. Her clients loved her, yet she remained underpaid and overworked. When asked why she didn't request higher rates or better deadlines, she admitted, "I'm afraid they'll go elsewhere." The irony? When she finally gathered the courage to raise her rates, framing it as a way to ensure continued quality and attention, not a single client objected. Some even remarked they had wondered why her rates were so low given her talent. The key to effective asking lies in how you frame the request. Instead of viewing it as taking something from someone, reframe it as offering an opportunity for mutual benefit. When you ask your boss for a promotion, you're not just seeking more money, you're offering to take on greater responsibility and solve bigger problems. When you ask a client for a referral, you're not just seeking new business, you're offering to help their contacts the same way you've helped them. Timing matters too. The best asks come after you've delivered value, not before. They come when the person is in a position to say yes, not when they're distracted or stressed, and they come with an easy way to decline that preserves the relationship. The language of asking is simple and direct. Would you be comfortable introducing me to the marketing director? I'd like to be considered for the project manager role. Can we discuss what that would entail? Based on the additional scope, I need to adjust our timeline by 2 weeks. Does that work for your schedule? Notice these asks are clear but collaborative. They invite discussion rather than demand compliance. They acknowledge the other person's agency in the decision. Remember that a no is rarely about you personally. It's about timing, priorities, resources, or any number of factors beyond your control. The most successful salespeople, official or unofficial, hear no far more often than yes. What sets them apart is their willingness to keep asking, to learn from each refusal, and to maintain relationships even when the answer isn't what they hoped for. The simple truth remains, you will get more of what you want in life if you ask for it than if you don't. The ask is where possibility begins. The sale isn't complete when you hear yes. In many ways, that's when the real work begins. Following through after someone agrees to your request is what separates one-time transactions from lasting relationships. It's also the step most commonly overlooked in unofficial selling. Consider two scenarios. In the first, you recommend a restaurant to a friend. They try it, love it, and tell you so. You respond, "I'm so glad you enjoyed it." End of interaction. In the second scenario, after hearing they enjoyed the restaurant, you say, "That's wonderful. What dish did you try? I'd love to know what you thought of the service too." You then make a note to suggest another restaurant that matches their preferences a few weeks later. The second approach transforms a single transaction into an ongoing relationship. It demonstrates that your recommendation wasn't just about being right. It was about genuinely wanting to enhance their experience. This is the essence of follow-through. Effective follow-through has several components. First is expressing genuine gratitude, not just a perfunctory thanks, but specific appreciation for what the person did and what it meant to you. "Thank you for introducing me to the marketing director. That meeting gave me insights I couldn't have gained elsewhere, and I really appreciate you putting your reputation on the line for me." Next comes delivering on any promises you made during the ask phase. If you said you'd send information, send it promptly. If you promised to keep something confidential, maintain that confidence scrupulously. If you indicated you'd provide updates, do so without being prompted. The third component is closing the loop. Let the person know what happened as a result of their yes. Did their introduction lead to a new opportunity? Did their advice solve your problem? Did their referral result in new business? People want to know that their assistance mattered. Finally, look for opportunities to reciprocate. The strongest relationships are mutual. When someone helps you, actively seek ways to help them in return, not as a transactional quid pro quo, but as a natural extension of a valued relationship. Technology makes follow-through easier than ever, yet many people still neglect it. A simple calendar reminder to check in with someone who helped you can make the difference between a forgettable interaction and a memorable relationship. Consider the story of Marcus, who asked a former colleague to recommend him for a position. The colleague agreed, made the recommendation, and Marcus got the job. Most people would send a thank you note and consider the matter closed, but Marcus did more. He scheduled quarterly coffee meetings to update his former colleague on his progress, asked about his mentor's current projects, and eventually identified an opportunity to bring business to his mentor's new company. 5 years later, when Marcus was in a position to hire, guess who was the first person he called? The relationship had come full circle through consistent, thoughtful follow-through. Remember, in unofficial selling, the goal isn't just to get a yes, it's to build relationships that generate many yeses over time. Follow-through is how those relationships flourish.
When I suggest that everyone should embrace their role as an unofficial salesperson, I often encounter what I call the ick factor, that visceral resistance to anything that feels manipulative or self-serving. This reaction is understandable. We've all experienced the pushy timeshare presentation, the misleading insurance pitch, or the friend who invited us to coffee only to ambush us with a multi-level marketing opportunity. These experiences create a mental association between selling and manipulation. But ethical selling, the kind I advocate, operates from an entirely different foundation. It's not about tricking people into doing what you want. It's about creating genuine value and building relationships based on mutual benefit. Ethical selling follows four core principles. First, it focuses on solving real problems. When you approach an interaction thinking, how can I help this person, rather than what can I get from this person, you've already eliminated most ethical concerns. The best sales, official or unofficial, occur when you genuinely have something that can improve someone else's situation. Second, ethical selling involves complete transparency. You're clear about what you're asking for and why. You don't disguise your requests as something else or hide potential downsides. When a financial advisor tells a client, "This investment offers higher potential returns, but also carries more risk than your current portfolio," they're practicing ethical selling, even if it means the client might choose not to invest. Third, ethical selling respects the other person's right to say no. Persistence is valuable, but pressure is problematic. When you make your case and then genuinely accept whatever decision the other person makes, you preserve both their autonomy and your integrity. Finally, ethical selling delivers on its promises. If you say a product will solve a problem, it should actually solve that problem. If you promise to deliver work by Friday, you deliver by Friday. If unforeseen circumstances prevent you from keeping your word, you communicate proactively and make it right. Consider the difference between two approaches to networking. In the first, someone attends events solely to collect business cards, follows up with generic emails, and immediately asks for favors from new contacts. In the second, someone attends events to meet interesting people, follows up with personalized notes referencing their conversation, shares useful information without expectation, and builds relationships before making requests. Both are selling, in a sense, but only the second approach feels authentic and respectful. The beauty of ethical selling is that it's not just morally superior, it's also more effective in the long run. When people feel helped rather than sold to, they become advocates rather than just customers or contacts. They refer others to you. They look for ways to reciprocate. They remember you when opportunities arise. If you still feel uncomfortable with the concept of selling, try reframing it as helping. I'm not asking you to become more manipulative. I'm suggesting you become more intentional about the value you already provide and the relationships you already build. When you approach unofficial selling from this perspective, the ick factor disappears, replaced by the satisfaction of creating genuine win-win outcomes. Throughout this book, we've explored a powerful framework for making unofficial sales in every aspect of life. Let's bring these concepts together into a practical 5-step process you can apply immediately. Step 1, plan to sell. Recognize that you're already selling every day, whether you're asking for a raise, pitching an idea, or convincing your child to eat vegetables. Now, instead of selling accidentally, you can sell intentionally. Planning means identifying what you want, understanding what the other person might want, and preparing to connect these desires. It doesn't require elaborate strategies. Sometimes a simple mental rehearsal before an important conversation is enough. Step 2. Look for opportunities. Sales opportunities aren't limited to formal presentations or networking events. They arise in everyday conversations, chance encounters, and routine interactions. the colleague mentioning a challenge their department faces, the neighbor commenting on your garden, the client expressing frustration with a current vendor. Train yourself to recognize these moments as opportunities to provide value and build relationships. Step 3. Establish trust. Before asking for anything significant, invest in building genuine trust. Listen more than you speak. Demonstrate competence through your actions, not just your words. Show consistency between what you say and what you do. Most importantly, genuinely care about the other person's needs and interests. Remember that trust is built gradually through many small interactions, not through grand gestures or persuasive speeches. Step 4. Ask for what you want. Once you've established trust, make your request clearly and directly. Don't hint or hope the other person will read your mind. Frame your ask in terms of mutual benefit when possible. Be specific about what you're requesting and why it matters. Prepare for possible objections so you can address them thoughtfully rather than defensively. And remember that asking isn't imposing, it's simply opening a door that the other person is free to walk through or not. Step 5. Follow up. Express genuine gratitude regardless of the outcome. Deliver on any promises you made during the process. Close the loop by letting the person know what resulted from their help. Look for opportunities to reciprocate and strengthen the relationship. Following up transforms a single transaction into an ongoing connection that can yield benefits for years to come. This 5-step process works whether you're selling products, services, ideas, or yourself. It applies equally to professional situations and personal relationships. The fundamentals remain the same: create value, build trust, communicate clearly, and nurture relationships over time. Consider how this process might apply to common scenarios. When seeking a promotion, you plan your approach, step 1, identify an opportunity like your annual review, step 2, establish trust through consistent high performance, step 3, clearly articulate why you deserve advancement, step 4, and follow up with gratitude and continued excellence, step 5. When building your professional network, you plan your networking goals, step 1, recognize opportunities at industry events or online forums, step 2, establish trust through genuine interest in others, step 3, ask for specific connections or advice, step 4, and follow up with updates and reciprocal support, step 5. The beauty of this process is its versatility and natural flow. With practice, these steps become second nature, not a mechanical technique, but an authentic approach to creating value and building relationships in every area of life. The principles of unofficial selling extend far beyond your professional life. Every day, you engage in what I call life sales, those moments when you need to persuade, convince, or motivate others in your personal sphere. Whether you're negotiating with your spouse about vacation plans, encouraging your teenager to apply for college, or convincing friends to try your favorite restaurant, you're making life sales. These personal interactions follow the same 5-step process we've discussed, though they often unfold more organically. You still need to plan what you want, recognize opportunities, build trust, ask clearly, and follow up thoughtfully. The difference lies in the deeper relationships and emotional stakes involved. Consider parenting, perhaps the ultimate arena for life sales. Effective parents instinctively know that simply ordering children around rarely works. Instead, they build trust through consistency and care, look for teachable moments, opportunities, clearly communicate expectations, the ask, and follow up with appropriate consequences or rewards. When a parent wants a child to develop good study habits, they don't just demand compliance. They explain why education matters, model learning in their own lives, create a supportive environment, and celebrate progress. They're selling a value system, not just enforcing rules. Romantic relationships similarly benefit from thoughtful selling approaches. When partners want to influence each other, whether about financial decisions, household responsibilities, or relationship needs, the process works best when built on mutual trust and benefit. The partner who says, "I'd like us to start saving more for retirement. Can we look at our budget together and find ways to set aside an extra $200 monthly?" will likely be more successful than one who demands, "You spend too much money. We need to cut back." Even friendships involve selling. When you want friends to support your charity run, try the new restaurant you discovered, or help you move, you're making a sale. The friends most likely to say yes are those with whom you've built strong trust and for whom you've done similar favors in the past. The most powerful life sales often involve selling yourself, not on your professional qualifications, but on your personal values and character. When you consistently demonstrate integrity, kindness, and reliability, you're selling others on your trustworthiness. This creates a foundation of goodwill that makes specific requests more likely to be received positively. Life sales require special sensitivity to timing and emotional context. The perfect proposal to your spouse loses its impact if delivered during a stressful work crisis. The well-reasoned argument for a family lifestyle change falls flat if everyone is hungry and tired. Part of mastering life sales is developing emotional intelligence, the ability to read situations and adjust your approach accordingly. Remember that in life sales, the long-term relationship always matters more than any individual transaction. Sometimes the wisest choice is to postpone your request or even abandon it if pushing would damage the relationship. Unlike professional sales, where you might never see a prospect again, life sales involve people with whom you have ongoing, meaningful connections. The most successful life salespeople recognize that giving often precedes getting. By consistently supporting others' goals and needs, you create an environment where your own requests are met with enthusiasm rather than resistance. This isn't manipulation. It's the natural reciprocity that develops in healthy relationships.